Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
This week, we are talking spiritual fluidity.
Yes.
What is spiritual fluidity?
What is it?
I think this is an important concept for people who may not have considered it. This is something that we interact with or encounter on a daily basis. But we just wanted to put some language to it so that as we're growing and figuring out where we're going to land.
Right.
You know, we explore different ideas.
We're putting some stuff out there.
All right. So spiritual fluidity is, well, this is me defining this.
Okay.
The ability to navigate and exist inside and outside of multiple religious traditions.
Very important. Yeah. And outside.
Yep.
Okay.
The reason why it's outside is because you may not find yourself associated with a particular religious tradition, but you're okay. Like, you're not uncomfortable around people, you know, when your family prays at the meal, you're okay. You know, right, what I'm saying? When somebody's in the hospital and they do their thing, or somebody passes away, you have to go to the church, you're okay. And
are you saying that the natural response or one of the elements present in the environment when spiritual fluidity is at play is tolerant or temperance? Like, you're saying, yes, you're okay.
Yes.
So you're okay, yeah, to observe it. You're just not, you know, instantly offended by watching somebody else's.
It's tolerance, but it's also, I like to think about it like the way I was growing up. Like, I didn't succumb to peer pressure at all. Like, it didn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like that. Like, I don't feel, you wouldn't feel a certain way. Like, you have to do something or you have to participate this way. You either do or you don't.
Right.
And you're comfortable.
Likewise,
that way.
You don't have to be offended, be, you know, vocally rejecting or,
right,
you know, like obtuse in the space just because something different is going on.
Right. And there may be times where you also exist inside that space.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be praying or you may be participating in a service or some ritual or tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine with you. Like,
mm-hmm,
you don't mind. And you may even have people in your family who experience different traditions.
Right.
And you're okay in that environment.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way we're defining it, is you're able to move and navigate these different things. All right. So the reason why I say this is an important concept is because if we think about the way that we live in the world in the 21st century,
mm-hmm,
we are a globalized society.
Yep.
Meaning our food comes from different areas of the world. So strawberries are always ripe.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You can get food that is not in season. You can find and encounter people that you would never speak with.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn information about other cultures. You can learn languages from other cultures from sitting in your home.
Yep.
Everything has become smaller from the perspective of it's within reach.
Yes.
Religion would also be one of those facets of life where you would also encounter other people or other traditions.
Right.
Where before you would be in your Southern Baptist community and you go to First
your
Baptist
bubble.
Church. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the way you grew up, and maybe it's a small town or, mm-hmm, not so large town, but you go to that same church and your, mm-hmm, family's been going to that church and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Or things are just understood regionally, i.e. a Bible belt. So, and not only just in your small town, but, mm-hmm, also in your, you know, maybe the majority of your state lives like your small town does culturally,
yeah,
or, you know, interacts religiously, a religiously homogenous small society.
I always had a feeling about New York, like when
it's dope.
It is, but I didn't always feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in college and, well, undergrad, and I was very indoctrinated into, mm-hmm, Christianity and evangelical Christianity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I would see people in New York and they would be okay with all of these cultures,
yeah,
and the different beliefs and all of that things. And,
yeah,
not just okay, you would hear different things that you can tell that they picked up from other things. Like Nas would say something that would be from the Bible and then something from the Quran.
Yeah.
And that was just a common theme from
That's how our
that,
neighborhoods look, though. That's how, by nature of how the housing is and how the communities come together, this idea of literally living one on top of each other gives you an opportunity to share with people on a peer level that I think escapes you when you live maybe in a rural community where people are so far away. You know, once upon a time, if you lived on a farm, your next closest neighbor might be half a mile away. So you're very self-contained in whatever's going on in your house. And like you say, you come out of that cocoon to interact with all the kids who are living on farms like you, who go to the school, or all the kids in your community who are living in a rural lifestyle like you, to go to one of three local churches. So it's but so much that's different. New York, which is where I'm originally from, it's so unique and it's such a gift. And most cities are, because mm-hmm. they are beacons to people who want to belong to a place, but they don't need as much space. Maybe they're not to a point in their financial situation, or they're choosing mm-hmm. to live in these places where you have this cultural richness, you have this diversity. So in a place like Harlem, old Harlem at least, you could walk up the street and on one end of 125th Street, somebody is doing an evangelical call to worship, you mm-hmm. know, standing on a mic with signs and doing fire and brimstone and all of this. You get to the next corner, it's the Hebrew Israelites. You get mm-hmm. to the next corner, it's the Black Muslims. You get to the next corner, it's the Black nationalists. So you mm-hmm. get to, everybody's Black, but everybody's not doing this thing the same. Mm-hmm. Add to it the strong Caribbean presence, and you have people who are bringing their worship of God, but just with a different lens. A lot of Catholicism in it. A lot of, we went over this in witchcraft, things that you don't understand are usually labeled and discarded as not of the mainstream, but when your neighbors are from, like in a place like Brooklyn, in a place like the Bronx, your neighbors are from Haiti, your neighbors are from Jamaica, your neighbors are from Cuba, mm-hmm. Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico,
Santa Maria, Ifa.
Yeah, and the understanding is just at another level. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about that fluidity, imagine all those kids mm-hmm. and then they go to their local school, or all those people, all those mothers, and all of the different religious information they have about mothering mm-hmm. just kind of collide at a place like school mm-hmm. or a place like the supermarket or the, you know, in the community. When you think about housing, some people can imagine a single family home subdivision, maybe 1,000 houses. We have developments like that, but they're apartment buildings. They're 5 buildings housing 1,000 apartments, and everybody's from there. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then the neighborhood around there is anchored by that housing development, a project, you know what I'm saying, in the cities. But there's such richness there and very deep roots. And, you know, your best friend's great-grandmother does not speak English, came from Cuba, cooks on Sunday or whatever, but she has powered that house with her view of what their worship looks like. And you take that and interact with other people.
And you have to in a situation like that. You're in a city with limited space. You either gonna fight all the time, or you gonna figure out a way that the Haitians can share the same bodega with the Hasidic Jews. It's just gonna work out. Yeah. So I get it now.
Right.
But before, when it was just, when I was conditioned,
when I first moved down here, I had that. It was jarring to me
because
everything was kind of more spread out than what I was used to.
Right.
But not in my house though.
Okay, so let's get to the types of spiritually fluid people.
Right.
All right, there's three types.
Okay.
First type is the most common type.
You're born into it.
Mm-hmm. These are people who their parents or families have multiple traditions existing inside them.
Yes.
So you may have, if you think like a Catholic parent and then a Protestant parent mm-hmm. or a Christian parent and a Muslim parent.
Yes.
Or, you know, you may have, I knew a guy with a Baha'i mom and evangelical dad or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you'll see this, you know, maybe if you're in church, you never see the other partner and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But people who are born into it, you know, you've fallen in love and chosen to partner across mm-hmm. multiple cultures, you know, Pakistani and Indian and things like that. Like you just have this.
Right.
And because you're born into this, this is your normal. You seeing the multiple sides of it, it causes you to understand, or at least be open to the fact that these are two realities
mm-hmm.
and you wouldn't say that one is bad and the other isn't.
Speaking from this personal background of my own, the one thing that stands out is that I knew that things were not always what they appeared to be, and that there is a lot of communication in these interfaith households where things have to be negotiated, you know, down to not even an adherence, like what are we doing today? Is one going to come before the other? But like, one of the ways that you see it in my home is that when we bless the food, we say a Christian prayer,
mm-hmm.
and an affirmation in Arabic that okay. is from my dad. And it's a Muslim affirmation of gratefulness for, you know, and thankfulness for our meal.
Mm-hmm.
But as a family, we do this. Now, we're a unit, a small unit, but when we get together for big family meals, it's been over 30 years. And when I tell you, nobody moves until we do the whole thing, because they know that, you know, my dad, their uncle, whatever, whatever. This is just a part of it. So it just shows up in certain ways, you know, or acknowledging or celebrating Ramadan with him. We make it a point to at least one of those days during that time to break the fast with him, because that's dad. You know what I'm saying? So that's just one way.
Right. And I think
that's a lot of sharing.
that ends up being a gift, because mm-hmm. you're born into a situation where your normal is all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that teaches you that tolerance or that understanding, or it prevents you from closing off your ideas about what religion can be or how mm-hmm. it can work. You don't have this tension of, well, one parent's going to heaven and I don't know what's happening with the other parent. Like, that's just not.
He's going to a party saying no.
That wouldn't be part of it. It's just. So that's the first type. The second type is people who convert from another faith.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's say you convert, like Sammy Davis Jr. converted to Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've had a faith and then you went to, you converted to a different faith, you don't completely disown the faith that you had.
Exactly.
So now you're able to see value in two different things. Yeah. You may draw correlations between, like, oh, you know, Buddha says these things, kind of like Jesus says these things. Like, so that appreciation is grown out of the fact that you're now experiencing two traditions.
Mm-hmm.
The third type is the type that we mentioned at the beginning, where you just don't align with any, but you don't have an issue with people who do,
right.
And they would consider themselves spiritual, but not religious.
Mm-hmm.
They are able to exist in maybe they have at one point.
Or adapt.
Yeah.
Adapt.
So those are the three types. And the important point about that is living as any of those types of people
mm-hmm.
is a challenge in a society that privileges singular religious identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are. You're Christian or you're Muslim.
The assumptions that can be made one way or the other are astounding.
Yeah.
Because, again, things are not what they appear to be. So even with a name like Amira, the assumption is that I am, you know, Muslim, and I'm not. And letting a conversation go from there. It's just like, I would almost think that some of my experiences have been, and I not to disrespect anybody, but almost like passing, because you can be in a room and overhear a lot of outdated or unfounded opinions about certain people's tradition and how you think these people are. And it's like you're hiding in plain sight because they don't realize we ain't like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I personally know, you know, I get a big kick out of telling people, you know, not only are these different things represented in my home, but like this person is from North Africa. Yeah. So this is not no jailhouse conversion. This is not no, I heard it from someone. Yeah, this is not Nation of Islam. This is like a legit situation. So, and not to say that those things aren't, but this is different.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to bring that perspective to, you know, these people's conversations, just because I realize y'all are talking about something that you don't know. You mm-hmm. don't know how this goes. You know, I've seen it. I've seen where we make space for each other. We always talk about make space for people. Let them be who they are. And when you can master that, not only inside of a home, but inside of a marriage, you learn different things about tolerance and coexisting and how to celebrate without having to change somebody. I mean, it's an invaluable skill set.
I wonder, is this more of an issue for Gen Xers and millennials who grew up pre-globalization, meaning you grew up as a whatever you were,
mm-hmm.
and then over the course of your life, you start to see all of these connections to people, whether it's through social media or whatever, like you're starting to encounter all of these people. I wonder, is it more difficult to understand that this is out there? Like, this is...
I think it's boomers and whatever came before me.
Okay.
You know, I think my generation actually does better with it, and the ones younger than me are fine. I think they are fine with that. Even though we see the polarization and we see this inclination, like you said, toward this singular expression, religious expression, even that is leaving so many people on the margins that the people on the margins are like, we're not participating, right? So even if you have this, like we talk about Christian conservatives all the time, people are like, this way or the highway, the Bible is literal and all of this stuff. And it's like, you can say that, but so many people are separating from those bodies because that is not a true reflection of their understanding, their intellect, and their belief and how they move through the world. That I actually think that younger people are okay. They're okay with not being defined one way or the other. I don't even want to throw the spiritual label on them, but they're just way more tolerant and way more understanding. You know, we talked about the fact that young people, we have a bumper crop of kids who have reached 18 who were born after 9/11. So they were born into this environment, this criminalization of Islam. Mm-hmm. For, you know, this is what has been going on. Looking high and low for jihad. These kids have grown up in that environment. But you also have the data that says that there's some overlap. There's some rejection of this idea that if it doesn't completely fit in this box, that it's not right, because they're leaving the institutions that require that either or. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think they're okay. I think it's their grandparents that are like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Or their parents like, what? You gotta choose. No, you don't.
You gotta have the one. Yeah. And that singular religious identity is such a huge pressure.
It's disingenuous.
Yeah, because, well, especially now, mm-hmm. it's not just the globalization. It's also the technology, the information mm-hmm. that we have access
to.
It's
right there.
Like you can not only encounter other people and other traditions and watch YouTube videos of different worship experiences and things like that, but you can also assess your own tradition.
Yeah.
And sometimes you find that those come up short in some of the things that you understood. So then what do you do with that? When you have access to these other things and you're able to see, well, maybe they don't do the same things that I do. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, maybe they don't burn witches at the stake or they don't
maybe
have
not.
Inquisitions or things like that. So it's the information does present a challenge in terms of what do I do with what I have.
Right.
You mentioned something that was really important in terms of the younger generation. And statistics around those people mm-hmm. align with this, what's called the rise of the nuns, the, mm-hmm. the people who want nothing to do with church. They don't,
right.
Nuns, sometimes they're called duns,
like, okay.
Meaning they've experienced church and they're done.
Right.
Or the people who just was like, I don't want any part of that.
Right.
Those are the nuns.
Mm-hmm.
That demographic is increasing steadily and mm-hmm. has been over the past 10 to 15 years.
Right.
And this is why you see some of your houses of worship emptying out, maybe not having the money that they are used to. Maybe mm-hmm. the same revenue streams have dried up and they don't know how to adapt or bring in new money and things like that. Those things have been happening. And Black Protestants are the most likely to leave their tradition.
Yeah, that's happening for a few reasons.
Like one third of Black Protestants mm-hmm. are likely to leave their religious tradition. We have another challenge being Black Americans.
Exactly.
It's almost like we have a critique that I don't know that anyone else has. Like, I don't know that anyone is going to say, you know, you got that white slave religion. Like, why do you have that? Why are you dealing with that Jesus? Like, you, and
I'm sure that critique exists everywhere where people are now in a post-slavery society.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is especially sharp here. And I think it is sharp for the right reasons, because as we reclaim a lot of the narrative, you yearn to tell your own story. So that awakening ends up being rude in some ways. And it's like some people's relationship with their religious tradition or their Christian religious tradition, or Black Protestant religious tradition, it's abusive. It's like, I love you, but I don't like you.
Mm-hmm.
And the separation, it's much like, you know, what I feel like I've had to kind of walk through, where it's like, I can deal with this, but I can't deal with this. This is not, you know, founded on anything but preferences. This is not spiritually sound. This is not theologically, you know, rooted. This particular idea or policy or procedure is BS. Like, you get to a point where you question those things. Now, when you reconstruct, you might find, I have found that people who have a different lens on their religious participation are giving me back gifts. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm glad that their critiques are not as sharp, but I've also found richness in the different ways that they express themselves spiritually or how they worship.
Yeah. To be fair, it is a valid critique that Christians do not address well. So at the heart of the critique is this assertion that you are worshiping another culture's God. Mm-hmm. So you are worshiping Yahweh, the Hebrew God, or you're worshiping Jesus, the Jewish prophet or mm-hmm, rabbi, mm-hmm, or whatever, mm-hmm. and you're overlooking your own cultural heritage, religious heritage. Mm. Okay, that is a fair question to ask. Why are you all in on this other culture's God and so adverse to
your own?
Yeah, your own. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think people really do have to wrestle with at some point, because
it's a valid question. Yeah. You cannot be afraid of information. I found myself in a conversation where I said that a real critique of God can stand up, or rather a real understanding of who God is to your own self and your own experience can stand up to those questions and to those critiques, because ultimately we're talking about the articulation of a personal relationship.
Right.
So I think what people are wrestling with is, how much of this do I throw away and how much of this do I take with me? But that is not happening just within a religious lane. When you are reclaiming your own narrative, you've gone through your whole existence, generations of people telling you how things work. Mm-hmm. Your oral tradition probably does not match what has been written down, because you didn't write that down. Your oral tradition says something else. I feel like the gift of youth is that you feel like you can make things make sense. You are invincible. You are resistant to the pain that keeps people from being able to explore why things don't match up. Yeah. Right. So even I did it, studying African-American history. I said, I want to know about colorism. I want to know about this, that, and the third. The price that I paid for that is knowing, because once you know, you can't just go sit in a pew like you used to.
Yeah.
You can't just go through the motions like you know, mm-hmm. like you've been taught to. These are your traditions. This is how you grew up. This is what the time markers through the year were. You understand? Like Women's Day and then Children's Day and Vacation Bible School and all of these things that are, they pepper your background. Then you invest in the development of your own understanding and your own intellect on these particular issues. You face down the history. You face down the facts that can be very ugly. Then you try to make sense of it after. Like you blow it up and then you try to rebuild it.
And so the reason why spiritual fluidity matters is because as people start to explore these things,
you need to make space for yourself.
Right. If you're living in this culture that's pressuring you into this singular religious identity, then you don't have a means to accurately address mm-hmm. these valid critiques. Like, okay, we're not saying anything is wrong with the Hebrew God. We're not saying anything's wrong with Yahweh or Jesus or anything like that. But we're also not saying that anything's wrong with Oshun or
at all,
or Ogun. Like, we're not doing it. And so the freedom to be able to say that is something that is,
and believe it.
And believe it, right? Yes. It's something that is not usually allowed.
That is the revolution before the revolution. I'm sitting here and that's what came across my mind. The revolution you fight for, your ability to think your own thoughts, comes before you do anything else. So as people try to figure out where they would stand and you know, how would they be resolute in the face of certain conflicts, certain negativities, if you don't have control over your own mind and your own thoughts, you don't know what the heck you're going to do.
Yeah.
So you have to be comfortable with, if I peel back the layers on this building or on these roles or on these traditions, then all I find myself with is what I know was authentic. I know that at one point in time when I needed, you know, when I decided that God could do XYZ for me, mm-hmm. and I put my faith in that and he did that, that becomes something real. That might be the only pebble from which you have to grow something new,
right,
when it comes to your faith. Okay, just don't be afraid of that.
And this is not new. We briefly, in the One Bible, Many Gods episode, we mm-hmm. touched on the fact that there were movements to, King Josiah was trying to establish this monolatry and he was trying to unify everyone under this one symbol of worship. But you still had people that were worshiping other gods and of other Yahwehs, and that's why you get the Lord is one Yahweh. Mm-hmm. Yahweh is one Yahweh. Because this has always been the case. As you're in these other cultures and around these other things, and you have these ideas, and you don't have all of this pressure that you got to choose the one thing.
Right.
There's freedom to allow for the fact that someone else believes something other than I do. And that's okay. I don't have to convert my family members and they have to accept Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior because I don't want them to burn in hell forever. Like, you don't have to do that type of stuff. So, all right, so let's talk through some of the other advantages and disadvantages of this spiritual fluidity.
Right.
This falls in the category of both.
Okay.
Most religion or religious traditions are really about community.
Yep.
And so there's tremendous benefit in having a community of people who believe the same things you do. You do the same things together. And you just know when you come together, you're one of me. You're like me. And so anyone who expresses any type of spiritual fluidity will feel like they may not be at home in the community. And I've experienced this in terms of, like, as I've understood or reshaped my beliefs, you know, going into traditionally Christian spaces, I sit there sometimes like, I don't believe what they believe. Like, sitting at a funeral sometimes and you're just like, I don't know. I understand this is helpful, you know, from a grieving perspective and things like that. And so that's why I'm there and I'm able to exist in that space.
Yep.
But it's almost like, you know, I don't want to say anything because the thing that I would say is going to maybe harm someone. Like, it would be unethical for me to say something else. So you have that, but so that's the disadvantage.
Okay.
You feel like you may miss out on the community.
Okay.
The flip side of that is if you are able to allow for and understand and exist in and outside of these other religious traditions, your community actually grows.
Yeah.
So it may not be the same community that you're used to, but now it's not just the Jews that are on the block. It's also the Rastafarians that are also next door. It is also the Santeria practitioners. It is also the Christians and things like that. So if you're able to do this, you actually gain.
An example, I was just thinking while you were saying that, I remember I had a funeral actually to attend in New York, and the person who had passed did have the opportunity to make their arrangements, and they requested a Catholic funeral. So when their family found out, they were like, why? We're not Catholic. Ba-da-da-da. But he, and you know, it was just a byproduct of his lifestyle. But he said the Catholic funeral, he felt like it was so structured so differently from, I would say, a Baptist funeral, that it did not give a lot of space for the heavy grieving and the emoting. He didn't want his mother in that type of pain. He didn't want her to take that posture, right? So we go, and like you said, the thing about it is that it could grow your community. Here's a place that we wouldn't have probably ever gone into to share in worship. But in our time of loss, not only were we welcomed, but we were introduced to a new funeral tradition. And it did bring, outside of the bewilderment is the word that comes to mind, because it's such an important custom, but yet we had not participated in how they do it. But it did bring calm, because we didn't know what to anticipate. We couldn't feel it out for that space that said, oh, here's where we fall out. You know what I mean? It just wasn't there. And it's almost, it wasn't about it being a gift, but I could see where he anticipated, like,
that's beautiful.
This will bring y'all calm, because it was like a gift. I can't, like, I still, this is my closest thing I had to a brother-in-law. And we had this crazy relationship, but when he did that, I said, thank you for doing that. Thank you for doing that for my sister and for your son and for your mom. You were so thoughtful, because you did what you do, and you are a man about your business. But you gave us the gift of peace. You had gone to enough funerals that you said, these Catholic people, you know, do it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And I want my family to experience that.
I love it. I love it. The other type, well, let's look at the extended community or your first community, which mm-hmm. is your family. For people who are not type one, born into this, mm-hmm. and they actually do have a family that practices a tradition together, mm-hmm. being spiritually fluid would pose a challenge to how much you can participate with that family. Mm-hmm. That's a tough one to navigate, because the assumption is that everyone does the same thing, or maybe you've done the same thing that you did as you were growing up. Mm-hmm. And so there's been no changes or anything like that, because you haven't communicated it. You haven't really gotten to the discussions and things like that. So that's a potential problem spot. You have to decide when and how and to what extent you want to express this to that family or that community.
Right.
Because, like I said, it's not just for your comfort. It's also for theirs, because these things do affect how they see things. Mm-hmm. These things do impact, you know, what they believe. Because another place that people struggle with religion is that there's always this question, this underlying question of what is true, like right. what is right.
Right.
Is my religion the right religion? Am I doing it the right way so that I can get the right result?
I don't find myself plagued by that question at the way I used to be okay. when I was probably more tapped into a more singular expression of it. And mm-hmm. I mean, this is after being exposed to so many different things, but the deepest root was the one that I was most familiar with, obviously. But I don't find myself saying, is this true or is this right? I'm not saying I'm like out of the box or anything like that, but I'm just like, be pleased with me. Like, what am I? You know what I mean? What is my real contribution here? Am I a good Christian or am I a good person? Mm. I want to be experienced as a good person.
You're looking for that approval from God or the divine or anything. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, right? I feel like what I kick out needs to come back to me. So if I am good to you, I am good to you regardless of the fact that I sang in choir or that I've memorized these scriptures or anything like that. I just want to be good to you so that I can experience goodness, you know, so I can see the good in people. I don't ever want to lose that. You know, you can become very cynical in interacting with other human beings, you know, people who are supposed to be, you know, staunch Christians just like you, or not even just about Christians, but they supposedly believe what you believe and adhere to what you adhere to, the standards, the aspirations, the idealized roles that you say that, you know, this is what I want or this is what I strive to be. And they will treat you like trash. So these are the human failings, right? Anybody who's been in relationship knows it, or who has tried to establish consensus or agreement with more than anybody but themselves. You know that conflicts come up. I am not really losing sleep over heaven or hell right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm like, did I do right by people today? You know, is somebody, I hope somebody knows that they might not have done right by me, but my heart is in a different place. You know, I'm thinking through things. I'm feeling my way through things. This idea of, you know, is your soul whatever? I'm straight. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I'm good on that. I want to be a better person. I feel like that personhood comes before any of these other labels. And I don't know if that's just a byproduct of knowing that there are so many different ways to show an acknowledgement and a love for a God bigger than us, but or just an understanding. But that ain't it. Like,
yeah. And so that you get into what this
you
is.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay. This is what it's about. This is what you're doing. You've unlocked the level of what yes. what we're doing. Like, this is relationship. Dun, 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 dun. Like, this is what we're doing. This is about relationships with people who are different yeah. from us.
Yeah.
Because as we've said before, and I will continue to say, the God that's in me is also the God in them.
Yeah.
And so as we work on that relationship, their expression may be different.
But spirit wants to reconcile itself.
Always. So that's kind of what we're doing. And when we're living in this culture with this pressure for this singular religious mm-mm. tradition, where that's the norm.
Extremely dangerous.
Because that's the norm in the culture, spiritually fluid people are by definition exceptional because they're not tied down with those mores of it has to be the one way. So,
y'all, I mean, exceptional.
That's kind of the point that we wanted to get across today. I did want to mention for my Christian folks.
Yeah.
Also from my Jewish folks, whoever's listening, came across a Latin American theologian, Jose Miguez Bonino, wrote a piece in this book called Global Religious Perspectives called Return to Babel. And the Tower of Babel in the Bible, the Hebrew Bible, the way the story is told in church is that humans wanted to build this tower so that they could, you know, get close to God and reach God. And then God punished them for building the tower and confused the language. And so the story is this is where languages branched off and different nations were born and things like that. Reading the Bible, that's not what happened at all. I believe this is Genesis 11. And in Genesis 10, the nations are already different. The languages are already different. So Bonino has this interesting take on the story that because the Bible doesn't say that God punished them and did this thing, he asserts that this wasn't a punishment at all. This was God creating the diversity that, that God wanted them to have. And so by confusing the language, instead of everyone just going in at it this one way with this one language and this one culture, God is saying, y'all can do this even better together, even if you're different. And so the way Bonino describes this, and it's a beautiful telling, it's this, it becomes this celebration of diversity, diversity of thought, diversity of belief, diversity of language and nationality. And that is kind of how I see the end game for spiritual fluidity. Like, we can do so much more if we're willing to embrace the differences among us and not have to turn other people away, you know, because they're not like us. Right. They're not on the team with
us. They're different.
So, as we're building out in season 4, we want to provide you with a couple things if you wanted to keep going on this topic, because we are done with this show. So if you want to read more about this idea of spiritual fluidity, I do recommend a book by Dwayne Bidwell. It's called When One Religion Isn't Enough. It's a really good. It's really
good. That sounds good.
Dwayne Bidwell is a Christian and a Buddhist.
Okay.
And so he has a lot of He has a lot of stories in the book about people who are exist in this religious multiplicity. And it's a beautiful story. Also, Out of Many Faiths, Religious Diversity and the American Promise by Eboo Patel. Eboo Patel used to be spiritual advisor to Barack Obama.
Okay.
This book is also another resource for you. So that is all I have for this week.
I think that was good.
All right, y'all. Be back here next week. Like, share this episode, review. Thank you all the people who've been sharing it on social media. We've been back. It's been good to see, you know, the riders that we got with us back.
Yes,
so thank you for all the sharing and the comments and the feedback and
the support. Thank you.
And the support. We will keep it going next week for Faith Uncut. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.